Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, February 4th, 2011. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research, and I'm the head moderator of the Bring Forth Forums at bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, please call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. Or you can join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Please visit our sponsor, Alan Feibelman, at waternurtureslife.com for information regarding powerful crystalline water. Our bodies are 70% water. What kind of water are you putting in your body? Filtration is only the first step. Learn about crystalline therapeutic grade water at waternurtureslife.com. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking to Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. We'll be here every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Carla, hi. Did you have any announcements to make before we start our show?
I do. We actually are going to be taking a little break as of March because I have gotten a date for the spinal fusion surgery at the bottom of my back that has been pending for a while, and that's February 28th. So we're going to have this show and three more shows in February on the 11th, the 18th, and the 25th. And then we'll take a little break while I do a little bit of healing up from the operation. And probably I'm hoping that we'll be able to be back in April sometime. But if you'll watch Spring Forth, there will be an announcement when I'm ready to come back. And meanwhile, thank you so much for the questions that you're sending in, and please keep them coming so that we have a good backlog. And when I come back at the end of this healing process, we'll be all stocked up with great questions to consider, because I really love the ones that I can answer as well as the ones that I have some clue as to an answer for, because it's just so neat to consider all the things that the seekers that write in or considering things that I never would have thought of sometimes. But it's all part of this wonderful world of the seeking person. You never know what's going to hit a resonant note for you. So write those questions in and give us something to chew on in these question and answer shows. Monica and I really look forward to every question that we get. Monica, you want to do the reading for today?
Okay. This reading is from a session from January 15th, this past January, from Kuo, I assume?
That's right.
The anniversaries of sacred occasions have an energy that has to do with the depth and purity of intention surrounding the original occasion. Marriage is an obvious example, and another that comes to mind is the cause of the discussion prior to this channeling session of working, and that is the anniversary of this group's receiving the contact with those of the Ra group. That occasion also had a marked spiritual energy and was the result of the desire on the part of three people, all geared in the same direction, all seeking the common goal of the truth. There was a hunger and a thirst there for moving closer to the beloved, just as in the marriage ceremony, there is the stated intention of moving closer to the Creator in terms of the union of two people, including the Creator in their union. Thusly, may you see that the nature of the initial occasion creates the importance of the anniversary.
I chose this particular reading, firstly, because it's brand new. I just was editing this transcript today. And secondly, because it gives me a chance to talk a little bit more about the Ra Contact and its 30th anniversary. We had the 30th anniversary on January 15th, and that was the day of this channeling session. I had not really imagined that it had come around again, especially for the 30th time, and it was a wonderful surprise to receive the many thank you letters from people all over the world. It was truly heartwarming, and it took me all week to read those. But that was just the first buzz of it. And as time went on, I kept moving back into thinking about the privilege of receiving that particular communication. Obviously, for anybody that's read the book, it took quite a bit of effort to do the work because of the fact that it was hard on me, and I had trouble even staying within 80 to 85 pounds in weight. And so our thinking at the time just was about the next session. You know, let's get ready to have one more conversation with those of Ra. And I loved doing it so much. I loved seeing Don Elkins happy. He was a melancholy man, and it was a wonderful thing to see him truly radiant with joy, that he loved to talk to the Ra group more than he enjoyed any conversation he ever had. And it was wonderful to see that. But, of course, it's so much more than that in terms of when I look back on it, because what's happened since that time is that it's sort of become a classic in a very minor way. It's been around for 30 years, so a whole generation of people have loved the material, used the material, handed it on to their kids. We've got second and even third generation Ra fans among our readers, and that's incredibly heartwarming to know that material that we've created has been a real resource for people. And as I look back on it, it really was a golden period in my life, and I think Jim would say the same. And Don certainly would have. He died in 1984, which effectively ended the Ra Contact. And so we're just grateful for the 106 sessions that we had. And, of course, the part of the life that we're living now, Jim and I, is living the Law of One. I still am channeling, but my channeling is of a conscious nature rather than a trance nature. And so it's a different energy. There's more feeling in it. And I think there's less of that pure, simple clarity that the Ra group was quintessential at producing, no matter what the subject was. So I just give thanks for it, and wanted to talk about it a little bit tonight. Later in that session, there is a quote here that I want to share with you, and it goes like this. One is constantly moving on, and yet constantly coming back to what began. And in doing so, one finds an opportunity to take up a different relationship to what had happened before, whether it is your marriage, whether it is the beginning of a communication such as the Ra Contact. And every time the event comes around again upon your calendar, you have again the opportunity to reestablish your relationship to it, to set that relationship in a new gesture of intent, to seek this intent within the deeper portions of your mind, and to allow it to inform your attitudes as you go forward into your daily round of activities. The resetting of the intent is a matter of exercising your will anew in relation to that which might have otherwise seemed old, and in this way keeping alive your relationship to those events which for you have had signal importance. I can think of no other single event in my life that has more importance than the Ra Contact. And this gives me the opportunity to set my intent once again to serve every day of my life and hope that I am able to be half as effective as I was between 1981 and 1984, kind of a long time ago now. when we had those golden days of the raw contact. So, Monica, what is your first question?
Our first question is from David, and I think this question is also being asked from a lot of people on the forum as well, because this has been the subject of several discussions. And the question is, in the raw material, it was stated that long ago, high levels of spirituality decided that mixing polarities on a given planet would be a useful experiment to prod entities who were not evolving fast enough or with enough verve on planets with a single polarity. How can this be resolved with the concept that the Creator provides enough time and has enough patience for all beings to evolve naturally without the use of spiritual technologies or other sorts of interventions?
David, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate the question. And I would respond to it like this. When you're trying to figure out why the Creator does stuff, you have to remember that the Creator created a hierarchical creation. The first suns that had densities were in the center of a galaxy, according to the material. And there were experimentations by each logos, each sun, as it worked with its planets. Each sun or each sub-logos, if you will, the logos being the one great original thought of unconditional love, the sub-logoi being the suns, the sub-sub-logoi being us. So, you know, we're kind of down there in the creative principle, but we are part of it. But the sub-logoi, the suns, they tried it this way. They created an archetypal mind. I think, you know, it was, I think it had a significator, and it had catalyst and experience, I think. Or sometimes they created a significator and the great way and connecting with the fool. There were all different things that they were trying to see what would be the most efficient third density experience for people. So they set it up different ways. Gradually, as more and more suns began having planets that began going through densities coming out of timelessness, as the creation, the great infinite creation as a whole, began to develop in this creation, the logoi that were further away from the center of the galaxy, in each galaxy, I imagine, had more data. You go, well, that didn't work very well. Well, that worked a little bit better. Well, let's try this. And eventually, they came around to a very small sun and a very insignificant part of this tiny little galaxy called Milky Way. And the sub-logos, our sun, was looking at things and said, well, see, that worked, that didn't work, this worked a little better. And they had hundreds of examples, right? And so the one thing that they hadn't tried yet was to blast the place apart with total free will. And so the Earth's sub-logos, the sun, created an archetypal mind in which free will was primal. Consequently, we have a very heavy veil and lots of free will, and we tend to shoot ourselves in the foot as far as being spiritual entities because we have so much free will and we have so little actual awareness and knowledge. And the more we try to beat at the doors of metaphysical awareness with our intellects, the flatter we fall. And so you can't do it with the intellect. You have to do it with insight. You have to do it with intuition. You have to do it with faith. So it wasn't a particularly efficient model, the model that Earth is using. It is, however, the creator of an extremely vivid experience because we are under such a heavy veil, and we experience things as if they were real rather than having a clue that this is all illusion and the real things are our hopes and our dreams and our intentions. So that's the story on how Earth became mixing polarities. Now, mixing polarities in third density is the way it's done, David. You don't split into positive orientation and negative orientation until you've made the choice. And in making the choice, you really have to have free will to make that choice. Consequently, when people get it here on Earth, they have the ability to make that choice right now because they have complete free will. So in a way, if a person is trembling on the verge of waking up, smelling the coffee and going, oh, wow, I think I want to make that choice. I think I want to serve the Creator by serving those around me, not by serving myself. If they're ready to make the choice, this particular sub-logos gives you every opportunity and every chance to do that. But you must have mixed polarities in third density or else the choice would be unavailable to you. So there's nothing that the Creator is doing. There's no intervention. There's no spiritual technology. This is the cosmology. This is the way things work in third density. There's more free will in this particular sub-logos' archetypal design than there is in any other logos that the Ra knew of. But it's the same basic situation. You have to make the choice, and then you have to be consistent about maintaining that choice so that you keep doubling your polarity and doubling your polarity and building up the polarized energy to do work in consciousness, to be a magical person. The only spiritual technology or other sort of intervention that was used, as far as I know, as far as the Ra group mentioned, was in the beginnings of third density when the guardian of Earth called Yahweh or Jehovah put before the council an idea for improving the genetic makeup of proposed third density physical vehicles for humans, which were the great apes at the time, and the changes included all of the changes that you see, the moving towards the erect stance, the more dexterous hands, the larger mind, the more of an ability to speak. All of those things work together, stronger body, stronger mind. Hopefully they thought it would help people understand the law of one. Unfortunately, they were in the beginning of third density. They had second density, great ape instincts, and they used their big mind and their ability to speak and so forth to defend themselves and to wage war on anything and anybody that threatened them. And the cycle of empire apparently sprang from the great desire of those of Yahweh or Jehovah to help out. And it was a mistake. And so then the spiritual technology of the quarantine was placed. There had been a light quarantine, which there always is, just so that negative polarity entities cannot simply take over planets. They have to wait and be called. But the blockade, shall we say, became much stiffer after the Yahweh mistake. So that's the only intervention, the only spiritual technology that I know of. And for the rest of it, this is a perfectly solid classic third density with both polarities on the planet together and a choice to be made.
Isn't the veil thicker here than elsewhere?
And
do I remember something about that would serve to accelerate the process? And I think part of this question was also, what is the value in accelerating this 3D experience when the Creator basically has all of eternity? Is there any value to getting through 3D more quickly?
I think that from the standpoint of someone that is evaluating a program, whether it's a spiritual program or whether it's physical education or whether it's a gardening program or whatever you've decided to do, you look at the plan. And then after the plan is over, you evaluate how you did. If it's a phys ed program and your people are getting toned and their blood pressure is coming down and their weight's being controlled and stuff like that, you feel, okay, that was a good program. And if those things aren't happening, you think, I got to tweak this a little bit. And I think that it's not a matter of being impatient. It's a matter of wanting to give to your children the best possible environment for growth. So I think those responsible for the spiritual welfare of Earth, of planets in general, the guardians of each planet, the councils that govern each solar system, and I think there are several solar systems in the Confederation of Planets system, they're going to look at, was there a harvest at the end of third density? Was there only a partial harvest? Was there no harvest? If there's no harvest, they're going to become concerned. They're going to want to tweak the program. They simply are trying to give to those that are in their care the best possible environment for their spiritual growth, for the growth of mind, body, and spirit. You could look at the densities as a kind of spiritual school. And we're in the third grade. And you want your child to be able to go to fourth grade at the end of the third grade. You don't want to put bars in its way. And so I imagine that all of the choices made by the guardians, all of the choices made by the sublogos in choosing an environment for those within their care, are based on what worked best for the most people in other planets at the end of third density.
To carry this idea even a little further, again, drawing from the discussions on Bring Forth on this topic, there have been a few members that have wondered if this entire experiment was considered a success or not, because up until recently the harvest was apparently very, very small. Would you say that it has been a success, do you think?
Well, you know, that reminds me of something the Ra group said at the very beginning of the contact. I remember the Ra group was talking about whether they succeeded or whether they failed in Egypt. I think that was Don's question to them, was, well, do you consider yourself, you know, that you succeeded in Egypt, or do you feel that you failed? And they said, we don't really think about whether we succeeded or failed. We just persist in trying to be of service. I think that this plan for evolution has had many challenges, the greatest of them being that this is a polyglot planet. There are 16 different planetary populations here, Earth being only one of them, that are attempting to finish their third density. So we have had an enormously turbulent archetypal mind. The roots of our mind as a planet are all over the place. There are 16 different versions of archetypal minds here. And if you ever wonder why so-and-so can't get along with such-and-such, sometimes it boils down to what the archetypal mind is, what the person's deepest roots of mind are telling them about who they are as a person, who they are as a sexuality, who they are as as a being. And it's not the culture. It's not the upbringing. It's way deeper than that. It's in the archetypal mind. It's in the way we perceive things. So I think that Earth has been very challenged in terms of getting through third density. But there's a payoff, I think, in that so many people are waking up so explosively right now that it's sort of like what's happening in Egypt, only in the spiritual sense, it's people getting together in that square, in that huge square that we've seen on TV, and rejoicing together because they have awakened. And they know what the score is now. They know how to do third density. They know that they're supposed to set their intention to serve others. They know that it feels really good to do that and that they keep receiving a hundredfold back when they attempt to be of service to others. So it's beginning to blossom now all of a sudden. And it's because of the complete free will of the citizenry of Earth that the tribe of humankind on Earth is changing so rapidly. And it's changing at the grassroots level. It's not changing at the level of government. I think that kind of thing would take maybe decades or centuries to show. But what's happening is raw and real and person to person to person. And there's a tremendous amount of awakening on the planet right now. So I think in the end, it's turned out to be a very interesting experiment. And I think it's one that people will scratch their heads about. And consider very carefully for a long time to come.
That's interesting because this topic, like I said, has been discussed at great length in numerous threads on the forum. And on the one hand, we see this awakening taking place. And on the other, we've got some of our members saying things like, well, when I leave this incarnation, I'm going to report back that suffering is not fun, and was this really necessary, and so many wanderers had to incarnate into this planet just to help raise the vibration so that there could even be a harvest. And it just seemed like there was a tremendous amount of remediation required to even bring this planet up to speed. So there seems to be a sentiment of wondering whether the sublogos even is fully cognizant of just what it feels like to be down in the trenches, so to speak, and to be down here on this planet enduring this suffering. Because it's one thing to look at the rejoicing and the awakening, and yet when you feel with compassion the suffering of another person and really understand how intense that suffering is, I can understand their point that, gosh, was it really necessary to have to go through so much suffering to get to this point? And I see this same idea being expressed on the forum, and I guess that's why I'm asking this as a follow-up to how do you think that is reconciled? I mean, with having to go through so much suffering for so many eons to get to this place is... You know, I guess that's all I'm trying to say is was it, I guess they're asking, was that really worth it? Was it necessary to go through all that suffering?
Well, I think with a thinner veil, it would be easier to make the choice. With a thicker veil, it's more difficult to perceive that you're supposed to make a choice. It's easier to drift along in that sinkhole of indifference, never do anything with any particular fire or passion. But then, if it's easier to make the choice, then it must be challenged. And in fourth density and fifth density, then that becomes a very long process because it keeps having to be challenged and you keep having to work on that intention. Whereas if you don't set an intention in this thick veil, you'll never get anywhere. I guess I would say, Monica, that suffering is part of the third density experience. And it's not something that the Creator bestowed upon us as a gift as much as it is something that we bestow on ourselves because we are not thinking like the Creator. If we think like the Creator, if we know that everything is perfect and that whatever comes to us is a total gift, and it's a gift that we need to unwrap with thoughtfulness and love, then anything that happens to us is material that gives us food for thought and ways to make choices to be of service to the Creator, to be of service to others, to be of service to the planet, and so forth. So, from that standpoint, suffering can be lightened by the awareness that it is an illusion and that the things that we are going through, while challenging to us, are also things that will help us to learn. And I think that this is part of the third density experience, no matter how light the veil, as long as you're separate in any degree from the awareness that all are one, then you are going to be seeing things happening to you from outside instead of seeing that you're part of a dance. And instead of cooperating with the dance, even when you don't like the steps very well, you will start objecting to the dance and saying, I'm not dancing this, and, you know, breaking patterns and making harsh movements and walking out of the dance hall. Of course, the whole world and everything you do is a dance. You can't really walk out of this particular dance. But that's what people really want to do, is I quit, I leave, it's too much. And I'm not saying that it's easy. It's never easy. I don't think on the easiest third density planet you could ever imagine people made that choice without suffering. Self-perceived suffering. So I don't really think that it's unique to Earth that people suffer in third density. I think what's unique to Earth is the power of our free will and the thickness of the veil. So things are brighter, more vivid, it's more like boot camp, but at the same time, when realization comes, it can come with more fire and more of a kindled spirit so that you are energized and enthusiastic and you really, really want to be part of the love on planet Earth. I think that it is a very good design and that we will, in the end, be very glad that we were those who lived on planet Earth and were part of this particular third density.
Okay, to our listeners, you are listening to Blog Talk Radio's In the Now Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, please call 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770. And press the 1 key. We really would love to hear your voice, so please call in. Carla, our next question is from DH. And DH asks, how can we resolve the conflicts and relationship problems between different religions and beliefs?
Well, I think the way I've done it in my own life is to educate myself on the different religions. I took courses in college, starting with Christianity and extending to world religions. I've done a bit of reading. And as I've gained life experience, I've seen more and more that there is one central vein of mystical truth that runs through all religions and belief systems. So I think the way to solve the conflicts between various religions, between sects within religions, between belief systems, is to focus on those beliefs that we hold in common. You can argue from now until eternity about whether there's one God or many. You can argue about tenets of dogma. You can argue about so many things in religion that people generally find that it's not very tasteful to bring up religion in public conversation because inevitably dispute occurs. But that's because people are chauvinistic about what they believe, and they sort of want everybody else to believe the way they do. And so you can't really talk from belief system to belief system. You can talk, however, and be on solid ground with just about anybody about the basic principles that run through the eternal wisdom. And those principles are those that are offered in the Law of One: the unity of all beings, the unity of all consciousness, our brother and sisterhood with each other, the value of love and faith, hope and charity, the reciprocity of doing unto others as you would have them do unto you, and some of the bigger strokes in the legal landscape, like don't kill each other, don't sleep with each other's wives, respect each other's contractual obligations, and so forth. So I think that's the way we resolve conflicts that occur because of differences in religion. We say, okay, put aside your dogma, put aside the details, and let's find out what our points of view have in common. Where's the center of this belief system? How is it helping you? What is it suggesting to you as who you are and what your job is here? And then you have much more to talk about, because then you can weave in all of the wisdom of the Buddhists and the Eastern religions, the passion of the Christian story, the wisdom and the charity of Judaism and Islam. And if you've actually read the sacred texts, you see the eternal truth winding through every single belief system. It really helps to be educated. It really helps to have a little bit more going for you than what people say about other people. Don't listen to other people. Don't listen to popular opinion. Get out some books. Take a read. It really will open your mind, open your heart, and you'll find that eternal truth shining through the heart of the mystical side of every religion. Don't go for the fundamentalist side or the hardline side. Go for the mystical side. And in the mysticism of all world religions and belief systems, you will find the commonality, the unity, belief.
DH has a second question that's actually related to what we were talking about earlier with the archetypal mind. DH quotes Ra. Ra says, "The archetypal mind is that mind which is peculiar to the Logos, under which influence you are at this space-time distorting your experiences. There is no other Logos, the archetypal mind of which would be the same, any more than the stars would appear the same from another planet in another galaxy. You may correctly infer that the closer logi are indeed closer in archetypes." End quote. My question, is the archetypal mind influenced by only the stars within the major galaxy to which the star system belongs? Or do all major galaxies and the stars in them influence archetypal minds of sub-logoi?
Well, I think that the major galaxies, the infinite creation, influences the galaxy. And the galaxy influences the suns in that galaxy. So there are overshadowings of other galaxies, logoi, in our logos, in the sun, which is actually sub-logos. So yes, to a certain extent, the major galaxies and the stars in them do influence the archetypal minds of the sub-logoi. But the sub-logos then creates the plan to influence the sub-sub-logoi, which is us. And so we're getting only the vaguest shadows of their influences. It would be like listening to somebody that was very much influenced by the music of, say, the Rolling Stones. And you'd hear riffs, chord changes, and so forth that reminded you of the Rolling Stones because they were paying homage to the Rolling Stones when they wrote a song that way. But you'd have to know the Rolling Stones before you'd be able to say, okay, that was the Rolling Stones. So it'd be kind of hard to pinpoint those overshadowings of other Logoi and say, well, now, see, that is what influenced our son to do the archetypal mind the way that it did it. So I don't think that we're going to get very far trying to figure out what influenced our Logos. I think it's fairly clear from what the Ra said about it that they simply wanted to try to use more free will and see what that would do. How, you know, what particular major galaxy and the stars in them influenced the sun to make that choice, I don't know. But something did. And we can assume that it was the experiences of other Logoi.
Okay, we have a question from White Feather, and White Feather asks about the quarantines and their penetration by STS entities. I would like to have this opportunity to ask whether the quarantine has to do with the moon's cycles related to the electromagnetic grids of the Earth and the tearing of such grids. The windows of opening may have to do with the moon cycles, as in a clocking system. I have worked personally with such a torn grid since I discovered one in the house we are living in. The tears in the grid seem to have been generated by Earth traumas, such as bombs, explosions, firearms, amongst other reasons. They seem to constitute openings for STS forces, and it's dangerous to stand in these tearings for too long. There are ways of healing these, and the time has come to do so.
So the basic question was what the quarantine has to do with the moon cycles, whether the moon cycles are related to the electromagnetic grids of the Earth and the tearing of the grid.
Yes.
Okay. I would not want to say that cycles such as the lunar cycle have nothing to do with the grids on Earth, but I would say that it's a tangential relationship rather than a direct one. And I think that what White Feather is talking about is the grids of the Earth that are tied to the space-time Earth. Now, there are metaphysical Earth grids. Michael Helios of Florida has done a tremendous amount of work on these grids, and I've seen his work. It's very interesting. And he says that there are two different grids. If we focus on the physical grid, we are not going to get very far in terms of lightening the consciousness of planet Earth. We're going to be pulled into the very, very physical, very weighty concerns of a dying density. If we focus on the time-space third density grid, which exists not firmly connected to the Earth, but sort of nebulously connected to the influence of the Earth, we get a lot further. And I believe that the kind of tearing that she's talking about are tearings within the physical grids, the space-time grids of planet Earth. So while the time has come to heal them, and while there are lots of people that have come back to the planet to do just that, they're really wanderers from our own graduation, that their first incarnation in fourth density, they decided to come back to Earth. They're called indigo children, and a lot of you are indigo children, and a lot more of you have indigo children, and you know what I'm talking about. They're a different breed, in a good way, a very salutary way, but they're really very concerned about this, to repair, to heal Earth, to heal these tearings in physical Earth. I think, however, as spiritually oriented people, where we need to keep our identity and our mission focused is in the metaphysical grids of Earth. where the damage of war and rumors of war and the anger and aggression of our species is not as fierce, and where the energies of those within the inner planes of Earth have been able to be part of the energy of the grid, so that you get a much more representational group of entities that have much more awareness of how things work and much more focus and ability to set their intention for common goals. So while I think it's quite true that there's a lot of repair to do in the physical grid of Earth, and that, and while it's quite true that there are people here that are very eager to work on that as stewards of the new Earth, I think that where we need to focus is in setting our intention to make that choice of service to others, and then to maintain it, to keep our hearts open, to keep our energy bodies clear, to let the love shine through, and to remember that we are all one, that when we look at each other, we are looking into the eyes of the Creator. I've had a lot of experience in my life working with people at the soul level, and it really is a revelation to uncover a person's soul and to be able to behold that person, not in terms of behavior, but in terms of vibration, in terms of deepest identity, in terms of essence. In talks with various people I've counseled, I've come to that point of pure realization of another soul. And that is always a beautiful moment for me. And I think that it's not just something that I can do. It's something everybody can do. If you deal with someone and just keep reminding yourself, if the person is behaving in a way that throws you off balance, look into his eyes and see the Creator. Look into his eyes and see the Creator. There's a tremendous amount of love that is unlocked by that thought. And as you view people with eyes of love, they somehow often come closer to being their soul self with you because they feel safe with you. I'm not saying this happens every time. There have been many times in my life where I have crashed and burned, not because I didn't have the capacity to see someone at the soul level, but because seeing someone at the soul level, I still could not keep that person from acting in a way that was extraordinarily inconvenient to me at the time. So, you know, this doesn't always work in a way that, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. But that attitude of seeing someone at the soul level is so helpful that I just encourage you to give it a whirl next time you're sort of backed into a corner by the way somebody is acting. Take it to another level. Don't try to approach that person with that person's tearings, shall we say, at the level that the person is presenting to you. Look at the person as a soul. Love that person as a soul. See that person as a soul. See the Creator in that person, and just love that person the best you can. And if the person doesn't get it, well, okay. But you've gotten it. You know, you've been able to do your work. And that's really the important thing as far as you're concerned. And you'd be surprised at how many times a direct giving of yourself to the person in love, not verbally, but just in your attitude, opens up for that person a new way to be.
We've got about 7 or 8 minutes left, time for one last quick question. Now, this is a quick question, but I realize the answer might be a lot longer. So if it looks like this will be longer than what we have time for, we can continue this next week. But the question is, from an anonymous member of Bring Forth, and it has to do with how 6D, in mid-6D, the polarity is eliminated. Is this done by a merging of STS and STO or by some other mechanism?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure I could answer that with any authority without being in the midst of 6D. I think that I would go back, short answer, right? I would go back to, here we go.
I just laid a heavy one on you.
I'd go back to the consideration of wisdom, love, and power. I was talking with my husband the other day. I call him Mick, although his name is Jim. It's a long story. You don't need to know. Anyway, I said to Mick, you know, there's a density for love, and there's a density for wisdom. Fourth density is a density of love and understanding. Fifth density is a density of wisdom. I said, why isn't there a density of power? He says, well, there is. He says, there's sixth density. When you combine love and wisdom, you get power. And I thought, oh, so there is a density for power, and it's sixth density. Because when you blend wisdom and love to get, I guess, compassionate wisdom or wise love, you have unlocked the power of the universe. You have seen that all things are one, and you are one who has the power and the responsibility of that awareness. So I don't think that there is a mechanism that unites wisdom and love. I think it takes millions of years. Didn't the Ra group say that their density lasted 7.5 million years, something like that? And it takes a long, long time to see the Solomon-like blending of compassion and love. Remember when Solomon had to judge the two women who both said that they were the mother of this one baby. And Solomon said, all right, I will direct my guards to cut the baby in half and give half to one woman and half to the other. Well, one of the two of the women was satisfied with that judgment. And the other one said, no, give the baby to the other claimant. And Solomon said, I hereby award the baby to the woman that just gave the baby up. Now that was a beautiful blending of love and wisdom. Another such blending that comes to mind is when Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, somebody came to him in a state of great distress during the time that the Christians and the Buddhists were fighting the Muslims. And he said that his family was Buddhist and his son had been killed by Muslims. And he had such hate in his heart for Muslims that he just was very distressed. He knew it was wrong and he came to his guru to ask what to do. And Gandhi said, take an orphan that is a Muslim, raise him as a Muslim in your home and give him everything that you would have given your son. Now, you see, love and wisdom are blended so infinitely, tightly in that solution that it boggles the mind, because in loving that child, in raising that child as a Muslim, he learns about the religion of his enemies, and his heart is softened because of love for this boy that he adopts into his family. It's a beautiful example of love and wisdom, but we can't really comprehend that without learning a whole lot more about love and learning a whole lot more about wisdom, and then working for 7 million years or so to see how those blend together powerfully and beautifully to create a unitary solution to all problems, so that there are no problems, there are only solutions, to use a cliche.
So in the last 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes that we have left, so if there is a blending to create this non-duality in mid-6D, you're saying it would be the blending of love and wisdom, the 4D and 5D aspects, rather than a merging or balancing of STO and STS, negative and positive?
Yes, I am. I think that the lessons of the negative polarity are useful for that polarity. The lessons of positive polarity are useful for that polarity. But when sixth density comes, the negative polarity can go no further, because the whole negative polarity, which the Ra calls the path of that which is not, is based on denial of there being a heart, or the there being that which binds us all together. Negative polarity is posited on the fact that we are all separate. We are all monads. We're you know, encased in these skins. You know, we certainly look separate. They're saying, well, we are separate. And what's going to help us in the long run is if we do everything for our advantage, and we use all the people around us to do that, and we train them to do the same for themselves, and then they can become like us, and we'll all be the elite, and we'll all be powerful, and it's wonderful. And for those that don't get it, then they can be our slaves. Now, you can't do that in the density of unity. So you can't evolve anymore, and evolution has a great pressure to it. There is this inevitability to evolution. So in sixth density, the negative entity can deal with sixth density light because they have learned to manipulate love and manipulate the density of wisdom, and they've earned the right to sixth density. So there they are, and then they just have to do this one thing more, and that's to accept that they are one with everything else, and they can't do that and stay negative. So eventually the pressure of that causes them to convert. And negative polarity is no more, because it doesn't work. Well, it didn't work in the first place. But there's a lot of attraction to the glory and the honor of negative polarity thinking. You can see it in corporations. You can see it in government. You can see it on the battlefield. You can even see it in games. And a lot of people have thought, well, gee, you know, I think it's this negative polarity has a lot to offer. Well, if you follow that out to its ultimate truth, you'll find that it is the path of that which is not.
That does answer that question very well. Thank you, Carla. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. I'm your host, Monica Leal. Our time is up. If you have enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, www.llresearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And bringforth.org, that's bring the number 4, th.org, which is LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Thanks so much for listening in, and a special thank you to those of you who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for Carla before the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org, navigate to the miscellaneous section, and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions. Or you can submit a private question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. And remember, we will be here for the next 3 Fridays, and then we'll be taking at least a couple of weeks off, probably just a couple of weeks. We'll see how Carla does with her surgery, but we will be here for the next 3 weeks. Please visit our sponsor, Alan Feibelman, at waternurtureslife.com for information regarding powerful crystalline water. Our bodies are 70% water. What kind of water are you putting in your body? Learn about crystalline therapeutic-grade water at waternurtureslife.com. We'll see you next Friday at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern.